April 7th of this week marked exactly 6 months since the Zionist entity's most recent assault on Gaza began. 183 days. 6 months of straight barbaric bombings, the brutality of families mercilessly being torn apart, and some of the most inhumane acts conceivable. Since October 7th, 33,000 Palestinians are confirmed to have been killed, but the real number is estimated to be over 41,000, with many still being unaccounted for and buried under the rubble. And it hasn't stopped. The anguish being inflicted onto our brothers and sisters in Gaza is ceaseless and truly began long before October 7th. This is precisely why we must continue to feel and fight for them for as long as it takes. This week, we've got a lot to get through. One of the most notable pieces of news coming out of Gaza this week being the targeted murder of foreign aid workers at the World Central Kitchen. Dee, what happened exactly and what has been the response since?
Yeah, so hi Alejandro and hi everyone. Unfortunately, we had a very loaded week. One of the most spotlighted stories coming out of Gaza this week is Israel's attack on aid workers. On April 1st, 7 World Central Kitchen workers were killed by an air attack in Deir Belah after delivering 100 tons of food to a central Gaza warehouse. Within the group, there were both foreign and Palestinian aid workers, and the foreign aid workers were from everywhere from the U.S., Canada, U.K., Poland, and even Australia. The World Central Kitchen says the group was traveling in a de-conflicted zone. They had made their movements explicit to the IOF, meaning they were giving their coordinates. Three vehicles were clearly marked with the WCK logo, and they were hit. So it seems pretty deliberate at this point. According to the UN, more than 180 humanitarian aid workers have died since October 7th. That's, I think, a record that has been set from what I've heard. Netanyahu claims that the attack was unintended and that there would be an internal investigation. In response, the UK and Australia summoned Israeli ambassadors demanding accountability. However, the US and Canada accepted Israel's excuse that the killing was unintended. Of course, there's no surprise there, right? But we're seeing a shift from the UK and Australia in terms of they're demanding accountability. The US is doing its usual thing and taking the back seat. The US rejected WCK founder Jose Andreas's call for a third-party independent investigation. You know, the U.S. claimed Israel has taken steps to ensure the safety of civilians on the ground, including aid workers. You know, we're not going to focus too much on the U.S.'s response because, again, it's well within their character. Following the internal investigation, Israel decided to dismiss two officers, a support commander and the brigade chief of staff, a major and a colonel. Others will be formally reprimanded. So we'll see what's going to happen in the, you know, coming weeks, days, whatever.
I really wonder what formally reprimanded means in the case of Israeli soldiers. I mean, we've seen it in the past. They'll get a slap on the wrist, basically, if even that.
Yes.
But can I just add one point, or can I just make one point, like, clear again? The World Central Kitchen has been, for weeks now, in direct contact with the Israeli military, as you said, sort of sharing coordinates, making sure that they know where they are exactly. And so this clearly shows that they were directly targeting them. They knew exactly where they were. And if I'm not mistaken, there was just over a 2 kilometer distance between all three of the vehicles. And so it can't really have been a mistake that they hit three vehicles so precisely, so far apart.
As you've said, ultimately, there have been no criminal trials or real accountability taken. I mean, that's why Israel, you know, behaves with such impunity. Bad news for Gaza, as always, unfortunately. Immediate repercussions. A scheduled aid shipment returned to Cyprus with 240 tons of undelivered aid, saying Israel is targeting humanitarian workers. So now we see what's happening. All this aid that was coming for Gaza is now turning away for fear of the life of these workers. Now, multiple aid organizations, including ANERA and WCK, have halted Gaza operations after the attack. And the UN has suspended night aid deliveries. Other nonprofits say they now need to determine whether their workers can safely provide aid to the region. The blatant nature of the attack on WCK's convoy has proven that aid workers are currently under attack.
I mean, it got what it wanted. Yeah. It got what it wanted in this situation. The WCK was put in this position because Israel has never trusted UNRWA and everything, and so they allowed specific groups to come in there and deliver aid. And now they turn on them, they kill them, and then there's no aid delivered into Gaza, which is exactly what Israel wants.
You know, I do remember reading something about the U.S. I think they were going to condition military support to Israel if they don't open the borders. Am I right about that?
I think some politicians floated the idea.
Yeah, and Israel almost, you know, because that's an existential threat for Israel if they don't receive the military aid from the U.S. And they suddenly changed their tune and said, oh, we're going to open the borders. I mean, that's all talk right now. So we're waiting to see if that actually happens.
Going from existential threat to another, I mean, on the same day, Israel really went to play on April 1st. They really flexed their muscles. Another bit of news that came out from that day was the direct strike on the Iranian consulate, the Iranian embassy in Syria, in Damascus, which killed a very high-ranking official or commander from the IRGC, which is like Iran's top army, so to say. There's multiple armies. The IRGC is kind of the professional one, so to say. This is obviously an incredible escalation. This is, I mean, it's technically Iranian territory, even though it's in Syria. Attacking an embassy is part of a country's sovereign territory. And so this is a direct escalation, directly hitting Iranian targets. They've been hitting targets within Syria for a while, but never did they hit direct Iranian soil, so to say. And in response, the supreme leader of Iran, Khamenei, he said the nefarious regime will be punished by our brave men. And I just want to touch on the exact wording that he used, because in previous attacks that Israel had done, the Iranians had responded by giving a kind of general message, kind of revenge, saying that Israel would feel their wrath, so to say, but it didn't say directly by them. That implies either through the Houthis or Hezbollah or whatever, one of these groups that are very much connected to Iran. They are separate groups, but they're connected. And this was the first time that Iran directly said that they will be punished by our brave men. And so what could this imply? This could imply a similar attack by the Iranians on an Israeli entity, for example, an Israeli embassy. Possible locations of that could be either in Azerbaijan or in Jordan, but who really knows at this stage, because Iran has to walk a very delicate line because it doesn't want to start a regional war. It's not in the strongest of positions where it would wipe the floor with Israel, so to say. But at the same time, it needs to restore that deterrent so that Israel doesn't continue doing these attacks on Iranians, because at the end of the day, if they don't respond, they will look very weak. And Israel, especially Netanyahu, who is a lunatic in himself, will continue these sorts of attacks. So the main message here is really this is an incredible escalation by Israel, and we are waiting to see what the Iranian response will be. But additionally, more news that came out, this time not being some direct action that we've just seen, i.e. bombings or something like that. This is now new information that has been leaked about AI being used in this genocide of Gazan people. Dee, do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, so Israel is using an AI tool, Lavender, to identify targets in Gaza. It's using this AI machine basically to devise a kill list. It's a targeting system with little human oversight. And it's kind of scary because I'm not going to say, you know, AI is at its infancy, but it's also, you know, it still has its kinks to be worked on, right? So the details, the unnamed Israeli intelligence officials who spoke to the media outlets said Lavender had an error rate of about 10%. That's a lot. A lot when it comes to bombing. But that didn't stop the Israelis from using it to fast-track the identification of often low-level Hamas operatives in Gaza and bombing them. It's all dependent on the existing surveillance system that existed in Gaza over the last years. Every person has a rating as to how much of a threat, i.e. how Hamas they are. Literally, they have a gauge of how Hamas are you.
I saw a video of it being explained by an Israeli investigative journalist, and he was saying how just simply by the WhatsApp groups that somebody could be in, if they're connected to somebody who they know or think is a Hamas fighter, that already kind of increases their rating, basically. So it's like from WhatsApp groups that they're involved in, from, I assume, to how far away they live from another Hamas fighter, if they're neighbors with one, that's how detailed it is.
Yeah, I mean, for example, somebody can have a rating of 40%. And thus could be deemed a medium threat. And then, you know, they're okay to be killed at that point, which is insane to me. IOF soldiers interacting with the system were reported to scrutinize the kill list for perhaps 20 seconds before giving it a go-ahead. Really? So they just skimmed the list and said, okay, sounds right to me. Go ahead, let's start bombing. Oh my God, it's just triggering to read this. From an IOF official, the IDF bombed them, Hamas operatives, that is, in homes without hesitation, as a first option. It's much easier to bomb a family's home. The system is built to look for them in these situations. When what situations? When they sit at home with their families sleeping. That in these situations when they're not in conflict, in battle? Okay.
It's admitting collective punishment, so to say,
exactly.
Admitting killing the entire family.
Exactly. That is collective punishment.
And that's if they are actually involved, because as we kind of said, like, they could just think that they're involved because they're in a WhatsApp group with somebody who they know is
exactly
involved. So it's...
And let's be real here. Like, Gaza is a small space. Everybody knows each other. I mean, it's a very densely populated area. There are chances where you are going to be in a group or related to somebody, etc. It's the insanity that surrounds this, it's very hard for me to wrap my head around it, to be honest with you. It's plain as day and night that This is collective punishment. So what to expect with this? You know, I do fear the future repercussions of this leaked information and that the occupier will most likely attempt to place all blame on imperfect technology and inhuman error, despite the lack of care or oversight for human life. Ultimately, accountability will never be taken, nor justice will be served. There's other things to discuss.
Yeah, I mean, now we've just got a tiny bit of time left to go through some of the headlines of the past week. And I mean, it's crazy that with everything we've gone through, we haven't even mentioned the Al-Shifa Hospital, which had been under a 2-week siege. The siege ended, basically, in the last week. The Israeli terrorist forces, withdrew from the hospital. And what came to light as a result, hundreds of dead bodies, missing body parts as well, showing signs of torture. I mean, we spoke a bit about some of the allegations that were being made in a previous episode, I think 2 weeks ago. And so, yeah, in the past week, we've now seen Israel retreat from that position. And actually, as we've been recording this, we've seen that the Israeli forces are withdrawing a significant proportion of their terrorists out of Gaza. Who knows what comes next? We can only presume. We can only guess. Other news has been that the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, has passed a bill paving the way to ban Al Jazeera, claiming it poses a threat to international media and freedom of the press, i.e. Al Jazeera is the only media source in the Gaza Strip and generally across the occupied territories that is displaying everything that is going on and is not under the Israeli media control, so to say. But there have also been a couple of good things, Dee.
So, in good news, Colombia follows Nicaragua in requesting to join South Africa in the ICJ genocide case against Israel. So now we're seeing a band of countries come together and rally against Israel because they are conducting a genocide. Other good news, Ireland's Sovereign Investment Fund is going to divest 2.7 million euros in the coming weeks from 6 Israeli firms, including some of its largest banks, for their operations in the occupied West Bank. So we're seeing some movement across the international community.
That's the international pressure that is being created by protests and everything. And so it's important to mention again that everybody keeps up the pressure and keeps making their voices heard to ultimately end this genocide. Because ultimately, especially for us in the diaspora and everybody living in Europe, in the US, whatever, the only thing we can really change is our own government's policy. And things like this make a big difference because in the end, especially in the case of the US, they have all the leverage over Israel. Israel is dependent on the US. Any final words, Dee?
Not much that I can think of at the moment. I mean, you know I could say a lot, so...
We could always say a lot, but unfortunately we don't have too much time. Well, in that case, thank you very much for listening again, and we'll see you again next week.